Agregó que los demócratas quieren darle más dinero a esta isla, quitándoselo a los granjeros, entre otros sectores. La economista Marta Quiñones opina que Trump debe hablar claro si considera que Puerto Rico debe separarse de su país.
En realidad, él está diciendo que Puerto Rico sí se ha enviado algunas ayudas, ha visto que hay un problema en la gobernanza en Puerto Rico, que es muy corrupta en la forma en que se van distribuyendo los fondos y cómo le llega al pueblo de Puerto Rico. Y él lo que está tratando de asegurar es que ese dinero llegue a donde tiene que llegar. Nuevamente, él no entiende que los administradores coloniales son los administradores que Estados Unidos impone sobre Puerto Rico, incluyendo la Junta de Control Fiscal, que es la que en realidad manda sobre Puerto Rico a través del Congreso de los Estados Unidos. Todavía él como que no entiende ese juego de poder que tiene sobre la colonia y es parte del debate que está generando. Lo que les debería que llamamos a Estados Unidos es que si de verdad considera que Puerto Rico tiene que ya separarse de Estados Unidos, que lo diga y que no tenga la independencia Puerto Rico. Pero no se ha atrevido a hacer eso porque sabe que pues nosotros somos un proyecto económico para los grandes intereses en Estados Unidos. Y entonces, lógicamente, en ese debate ellos tienen que definir si le van a seguir enviando ayuda a Puerto Rico, manteniéndolo en este ciclo de dependencia, o si van a estructurar un modelo diferente donde ni la Junta de Control Fiscal esté incluida, ¿verdad? Que es parte de lo que el Congreso nos está enviando, de manera que nos puedan dar mayor autonomía y nosotros entonces autogestionarnos como pueblo.
En Chile, el pueblo mapuche anuncia la creación de su propio gobierno. Tiare Valenzuela preparó el siguiente reporte.
En el centro de su lucha se levanta el rostro de Camilo Catrillanca. Hace poco más de 3 meses, 2 de los carabineros implicados en su asesinato pudieron irse tranquilamente a descansar a sus casas, mientras el pueblo originario solo sabe de represión, como lo ocurrido hoy en Temuco.
Carabineros provocando a la manifestación pacífica.
Queda claro aquí que en la Araucanía hay un apartheid. Es la única parte del mundo en donde todos pueden manifestarse. Estudiantes, trabajadores, mujeres, excepto los mapuches.
Y de montajes. Como justificando la bala que le perforó el cráneo, desde el día 1, Catrillanca fue involucrado en un delito.
Siempre usted estuvo vinculando el asesinato del Huaychafe Catrillanca con los robos del vehículo y señalando y entregando antecedentes que finalmente fueron los que terminaron en este informe, dado que todo esto era la preparación de un montaje respecto a este asesinato. Es la duda que me queda, por lo tanto también por su intermedio, presidente, tengo derecho a señalarlo.
En el suelo, apuntado con armamento de guerra, oficiales MPC de 15 años que acompañaba a Catrillanca. Según su testimonio, querís que te mate como a tu peñi, fue una de las tantas amenazas que le esgrimió el ex sargento de carabineros Raúl Ávila, institución que bajo el alero de la cartera de interior ha incurrido en diversas irregularidades.
Yo creo que lo que hay que avanzar hoy día es establecer las responsabilidades políticas y la injerencia política que hubo en esto, lo que ocurrió ese día.
Siempre hemos dicho, nosotros estamos diciendo la verdad y creo que queremos justicia, y hoy día el pueblo nación mapuche está optando por la libre determinación del pueblo nación mapuche.
Por eso han anunciado la formación de un gobierno mapuche.
Anuncio desde hoy, 3 de abril del 2019... y en el mes de abril, final de este mes, vamos a realizar la segunda sesión de la Asamblea Constituyente Mapuche para elaborar y adoptar un estatuto para la formación del gobierno.
Entraría en vigencia a más tardar en mayo de este año.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos. Thank you.
that's something needs to happen real soon. You got to save free radio. Yes, we need a new studio. We need it to be economical. It doesn't have to be a big place. It could be a small room. We'd like to have access to a bathroom. If the whole thing is clean and dry and has electricity, that's a real plus for us. Somewhere between the West Side and 41st Avenue, maybe part of your garage, or we could put a shack in your backyard. We'll consider pretty much any solution you can come up with. We're 20 years old. We're a community-supported pirate radio station. We've received official recognition 3 different times for our public service over the last 20 years, and we're offering a $300 reward to anyone who will get us a studio that we can use for at least a year. So send that email to frsc@freakradio.org. That's frsc@freakradio.org, or you could send mail to FRSC PO Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California 95061.
Jamil Perron, and I'm calling from the Wabash Valley Correctional Facility in Indiana. I'm currently housed in a maximum facility. I've been locked up since a juvenile. I was away from the juvenile courts to adult courts. And juvenile justice reform is something that must be advocated for, because the waiver process is a process that's critical to proceedings. Because the waiver process is something that's highly dependent upon for the juveniles to receive justice when they get to adult court. If the waiver process isn't right, that means the jurisdiction that's waived with the juvenile isn't there, meaning that the adult court doesn't have jurisdiction to try or convict. And that's the situation that I'm under, the same situation that other offenders was under. And we are being ignored 100% because juvenile justice reform is something that's not advocated for. So hopefully in the near future, soon, it could be something that stood up against a system that's helped. Thank you.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
And up next on Free Radio's stream at freakradio.org, or possibly somewhere else on your computer, it's the, April 4th, 2019 edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. That's my show. And today we're going to take a rather close look, actually play a lot of audio recorded last night at the community meeting, speaking out against hate and supporting the Ross camp, and not exposing as much of the dilly-dallying, double-crossing, and double-backing of the Santa Cruz City Council and its shitty manager, Martine Bernal, and his shitty manager representatives, Susie O'Hara and Tina Scholl. But some, as well as the Ross Camp Council's, essentially kind of, I wouldn't call it a press release, though there was a reporter from the Sentinel present at this two-hour-long shindig last night at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. New York stayed until the very end, and then schmooze with folks afterward. About 60 to 70 people were in the room. It pretty much stayed put in a big circle and a sort of a lengthy discussion, concerned to a large extent with exploring the community's response to the possible shutting down of the Ross camp without any adequate shelter for folks there. There wasn't even much discussion of the rather obvious fact that shutting down the Ross camp without adequate shelter would simply flow everybody back into the Greenbelt, the parks, the residential neighborhoods, downtown, the beachfront areas, as I pointed out and numerous others pointed out at the various city council meetings. And, of course, there's another council meeting coming up on Tuesday the 9th, where the Depot Park is due to be dumped due to the massive, not in our Depot Park and anywhere else, but actually we're not suggesting anywhere else, response by a large number of people organized by the Depot Park or Save the Depot Park, Friends of the Depot Park, that's what it was, group that showed up en masse before the last city council meeting at the end of March. We're going to hear a speech that attorney Anthony Prince, who's general counsel to the California Homeless Union, who's not running the lawsuit but is giving advice and training to the homeless folks who are themselves representing themselves, apparently if things proceed as they started, in a lawsuit that's due to be filed literally any day now. It could be filed tomorrow, could be filed Monday. I'm getting reports that it is imminent because it has to be filed due to the ambiguity and the well, it seems like there's a determination by the city of Santa Cruz to shut down the Ross campground. First they said March 15th, then they said April 17th. Then the city manager said, we'll start clearing out on April 10th, or at least assisting people in getting out of there. But then there's a more ambivalent posting. It's sort of an indefinite future. I'm not entirely clear about that posting. But so far, the city council's latest resolution on this, which was, I believe, the meeting before the last meeting in March, was, or even before that, I think it was the first meeting in March, which had something to the effect of, as soon as the 1220 River Street Boneyard barbed wire campground is reopened and the Lot 24 depot site gone by dawn, not an encampment, but a nighttime place to throw down your sleeping bag and sleep and then get the hell out of there, which the city is claiming as some kind of alternate shelter, that will be the excuse for shutting down the Ross camp. Now, the fact that that doesn't in any way provide for the number of beds or floor spaces or sleeping bag spots that are needed seems to be in contradiction to the Martin versus Boise decision, which requires the city to have those before they can attempt to use force. Maybe they could try to talk the homeless people out of their Ross camp by telling them how unsafe it is or how wonderful things are somewhere else. Or the likelihood is they will offer them some motel vouchers, particularly for those who are plaintiffs in the lawsuit, and try to buy them off with a few days or weeks lodging. That is the standard approach of cities across the state and across the probably across the country who are getting rid of who get rid of community homeless encampments by and if there are lawsuits, buying off the people who are making the lawsuits or saying, look, you know, not even really buying them off. It's not corruption. It's more like, see, we've offered you a place to go. Therefore, you no longer have to be here. And therefore, we can force you to move based on other laws, which is might be what the city's trying to do. So let's listen to some of this discussion. I am not going to interject much because I'm exhausted, frankly, from last night's activities. And there were meetings today with ACLU lawyers who may also be joining the case. That's not clear, but it's quite a possibility. Not that I'm terribly enthused with ACLU lawyers. They essentially destroyed the Jones decision in Los Angeles by settling the case rather than upholding that and making it a nine-state or ten-state-wide precedent, which is, for example, what Martin versus Boise now is. You can't go after homeless people unless you have shelter for them, which is really what the Jones case found down there in Los Angeles. An update from Alicia Kuhl, who is the liaison with the Ross Camp Council. And there's also a meeting tonight of those who are so-called Friends of the Depot Park, who came en masse to City Council demanding that Lot 24 near Depot Park not be used as this dusk-to-dawn sleeping spot for some folks. 50, I guess it was, the number that they suggested. In spite of the success of managing a similar or identical situation, but the city under Susie O'Hara managed to keep going for 6 months at a rather expensive cost of, you know, what, $75,000 to $90,000 a month at the River Street Boneyard Barbed Wire 1220 Campground out there on Highway 9. And, you know, I heard no complaints from neighbors, at least none that were voiced very loudly. Nobody came to City Council and complained about it. Maybe if they did, that certainly was not to the extent that anybody did with this proposed Depot Park, which has suddenly become a touchstone for mass hysteria around needles and our children are in danger and all kinds of unfounded, wildly exaggerated claims and concerns that pin the criminal mask on homeless people in a way that we probably have seen it in other countries more recently. It's, you know, traditional to go back to the Jews in Germany or the beggars in Germany, which actually, they don't say they predated the Jews, but around the same time as Hitler was going after the mentally disabled and the Jews, he was also going after hobos, tramps, politically undesirables. Not exterminating them, but locking them up in concentration camps where the exterminations happened later. It's happened in many countries with many different groups. But to see this kind of thing happening here is pretty nasty, particularly coming from people in these neighborhoods with well-to-do people, probably many of whom voted for Clinton and who call themselves Democrats. But I've always said that the local Democrats are nothing but Republicans, you know, in Democratic Party guise. And the Democrats are just as much a war party and a war on the poor party as the Republicans in Santa Cruz and probably in a lot of other cities as well. Anyway, that's coming up, so stay tuned. And you can also go on out to the Depot Park station today. That's actually happening even as this show begins. It starts at 6, and I think it goes for a couple hours. Out at the Depot Park station, even as I speak, or you're hearing my recorded message here, starting around 6, the Friends of the Depot Park are having this sort of interchange with council member Drew Glover, who is out there speaking about his, I guess he's trying to clarify for them what the difference is between an encampment and a safe sleeping zone at night, which has not been made very clear perhaps to some folks, and also how he also opposes the Depot Park, didn't he? And he proposed other sites, but the city council staff, the favorites of Martine Bernal and Mayor Martine Watkins and Shadow Mayor Cynthia Matthews, as I call her, chose the Depot Park site, and because that's the one that Susie O'Hara decided that she wanted. She won't be living there, of course, but she chose it. She and Tina Scholl. And anyway, that was what the staff concluded. And of course, my big objective has been to get these so-called progressive council members to disentangle themselves from the right-wing agenda of the staff, which has to do with throwing money at developers, ignoring or excluding and criminalizing the homeless. Boy, I am going on at some detail even before the show begins. So I think I'm going to stop here, but I guess I began this because I want you to know that if you want to drop everything and go out to Depot Park, you'll find activists out there who came last night to the community meeting supporting the Ross camp in what is likely to be a very critical environment, as I say, a very hostile environment to homeless folks, or at least to homeless folks having any right to camp or sleep in the Santa Cruz community, other than a very small number of them already in established shelters. The rest of them get lost, or it's the old hideout or get out, as I say, alternatives. In any case, let's begin the show, if we already haven't, and you'll hear more. Or you go out there to Depot Park Station and find out what's going on, and we'll hear more from you later, because you should always call in to 423-4833 with reports, video and audio at yourself, and post it on various social media so people can see what's going on, and hold the city accountable. My feeling is, much as I criticize Friends of Depot Park, and I do, for their, I think, ignorance and bigotry, and a lot of hate stuff going on there, my real blame falls on city authorities who are, if not manipulating, at least ignoring real considerations in this situation and pitting different segments of the community against each other so they don't have to take any responsibility and can play with the money. Somewhat cynical view on my part, or perhaps a realistic view. Who knows?
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Let's begin with the headlines, above the fold story from today's Santa Cruz Sentinel, or Sentinel as they call themselves. The headline is Santa Cruz Metro removes benches from 6 bus stops. Transportation agency addresses issue of transients using bus stop benches and shelters. Old days, even a few years ago, maybe even a few months ago, you would have government agencies saying things like, well, we're concerned about criminal conduct, or we're concerned about needle users, or we're concerned about bad behavior downtown that's driving away tourists, perhaps, or we're concerned with violence, machete-wielding homeless folks. So they would, let's put aside the word homeless. We're not discriminating against the homeless with ordinances that ban essentially anybody who's not shopping or with the resources to go into and sit in a cafe or not sit for any more than an hour on a public bench, bans them from downtown. No, those aren't homeless people. It's just bad behavior we're concerned about. No longer is this mask necessary. So let's take a look at this story, because the story specifically talks about transients, which is, that's just sort of their nice word of saying, they're just passing through, they're not really part of the Santa Cruz community. It tends to give one that impression. And this is a story by Elaine, who I've never heard of before, but she's probably been a regular writer on the Sentinel. Maybe she's a new writer. Here's what the story reads. Santa Cruz Metro is conducting an experiment to address issues with transients at bus stops, according to Barrow Emerson, Planning and Development Director. Santa Cruz Metro has removed benches at 6 bus stops within the last year. Looks like they just got wind of this, huh? Benches have been removed at the following locations: in Santa Cruz and Felton, Front Street, Soquel Avenue, Water Street, Coral Street, Pacific Avenue, and from the Felton Fair Shopping Center. There are no overhead coverings at the Soquel Avenue, Water Street, and Coral Street bus stop locations. We have removed benches every once in a while as a response to dealing with transient problems, Emerson said. This is actually the real reason why the bathrooms have been, for a year, closed to the general public at the Loudoun Nelson Center, in spite of our even recent pleas to Tony Elliott, the new director of Parks and Rec. His only response is, oh, well, we'll talk about it some more, while people get to hold their water and go shit in the bushes, or walk to the police station and try to get in there to take a crap, or maybe go up to Depot Park and deal with the Friends of Depot Park as they try to use the bathrooms in Depot Park. Actually, I don't suggest there's any problem with that, but it's quite a walk to go up to Depot Park. In any case, back to the benches. Emerson said it is also a response to complaints from Metro riders of people on the bench for an extended number of hours with their personal belongings and using seating and sometimes standing space. Transient issues have dissipated in these locations since the benches have been removed, according to Emerson. Of course, that also means that disabled and elderly people can't use that area. And the notion that this is somehow should be a crime, instead of installing more benches, their main objective is to eliminate any possible places where people could rest that might, result in people collecting around those areas for sanctuary. So they remove the guard against the rain, the shelter aspect of the bus shelters. 150 metro bus stops, 420 stops with benches, 182 sheltered stops. Each of the sheltered stops have benches except for the two removed in Felton and Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz resident Carl Hiller has been using the Front Street and Felton Fair shopping center bus stops for more than 10 years, and the metro system in general for more than 13 years. Hiller is disabled. Now that the benches are gone, Hiller is forced to stand until the bus comes, regardless of the pain it causes him, said Dagny Blaskovich, Community Connection Program Coordinator and Hiller's friend and liaison. Hiller still uses metro buses because they are his main source of transportation. But it has become increasingly difficult, and sometimes he just have to rely on rides from other people in his life, according to Blaskovich. Emerson said it has been confirmed with Metro's legal counsel that it is not an Americans with Disabilities Act requirement to have benches in place at the bus stops. I have no idea whether that's accurate or true, but it certainly is a cruel, abusive, and discriminatory thing to do. And also, it is an example of the kind of really toxic mindset that is spreading over Santa Cruz. Notice it's not coming from the Friends of the Depot Park. It's not coming from those folks, although they may no doubt support it. I don't know. But it is coming from the institutional bureaucracy of the Metro. And just as the anti-homeless laws of the last 30 years have come from the institutional bureaucracy of the Santa Cruz city authorities and to some extent the county authorities, mostly the city authorities, because the city authorities have there's the largest concentration of folks down here, but it's you don't really have a countywide sleeping ban in the same way that you have a citywide sleeping ban. And that sleeping ban now, of course, has been ruled unconstitutional by the Martin versus Boise decision. They're trying to do other things, like remove benches and so forth. This, of course, was also done after the earthquake, when there was a complete remodeling of the mall and a removal of all the beautiful brick waist-high planters that had been in place during the 70s and 80s in the downtown Pacific Avenue area. And instead, you had a smattering of benches put back in and then reduced by half. And some of them relocated to the side streets. We tried to fight that around 2002, I would say unsuccessfully. And you have now, of course, you have new laws about you can't be on a bench for more than an hour. But, of course, if you are, you have the case of massive selective enforcement that is a possibility. And also, we've seen it actually in operation. We tried to do a protest where we specifically had a guy sitting on a bench for more than an hour, and we tried to get a police officer decide her, or him, actually. It was Bernard Klitzner, Bashful Bernard, as I like to call him, and they refused. Even though she was doing nothing else at the time, this police officer. Anyway, to finish this story in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, Emerson said Metro was addressing the transient situation in a compassionate way. It's amazing. It's just become doublespeak of the most ridiculous kind. And will continue to provide the sheltered stops to accommodate riders. He said the Metro has received some written complaints about the benches not being there, and staff has responded and explained the experiment. This is what we're doing to solve a singular problem. Those damn homeless people. And that's from the April 4th edition of the Santa Cruz Sentinel. So last night at the community, I guess it was, what did we call it? It was an action against hatred. Let me get the name right. Have a heart, stop treating those outside as criminals. There is no place for hate in Santa Cruz. This is a community gathering organized by a number of organizations at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, including Conscience in Action, HUF, Poor People's Campaign, Food Not Bombs. And there were quite a number of people who showed. I feared there'd be a small number, 20 or 30 people at most. There was at least 60 at one point. And it stayed pretty much over 50 throughout the entire evening, at least until the very end. They had the Ross Camp Council there, as I mentioned before, three or four people from a larger council who are trying to not so much represent the Ross Camp as they're a group that wants to be a liaison for people wanting to have communications with the Ross Camp and for Ross Camp people wanting to join the Ross Camp lawsuit to protect Ross Camp, which is threatened with elimination on April 17th. Unless there's a change at the April 9th City Council meeting coming up this next Tuesday, which is by no means certain. However, there is word from Alicia Kuhl, who's the liaison with the Ross Camp Council, that attorney Anthony Prince and the plaintiffs, who are all filing their own lawsuits, will be filing on Tuesday, unless they get an assurance from the city there will be no movement of the Ross Camp. And maybe even if they get that assurance, in order to make sure that the city doesn't welch on its words or do what cities often do when they're dealing with powerless groups of people. They just lie about it and then cover their asses with the fancy talk and a few motel vouchers. Wasn't that what Susie O'Hara did when she and Tina Scholl and Martine Bernal, the city manager, promised that the River Street camp would be open until April of this year and then closed it last October? Not very trustworthy, I'd say. By the way, I've invited Susie O'Hara to come on Free Radio and discuss these issues. So far, she has declined to do so. On the other hand, I'll be talking with Martine Watkins tomorrow, assuming I can make it in there. I am wheezing away here. We're going to have this long-delayed discussion of a variety of things. The Free Radio, as a Free Radio broadcaster, I try to give every mayor a series of questions about what their accessibility is, their transparency, their intentions. And you'll hear me criticizing her to death on Free Radio. Well, I don't think it has any impact in any respect on her at all, actually. But you never can tell. But hopefully it educates the community about what she's doing in terms of manipulating agendas, cutting short speakers, pushing phony non-solutions to homeless issues that further enrage, embitter, and polarize the community, repressing the progressive majority that has supposedly gotten into power, but actually has now been co-opted by Cynthia Matthews in the form of Justin Cummings' involvement with county authorities. I can't get a response from Cummings either. I've repeatedly requested a response from him at least several times. Can't get much, if anything. I can't get anything, actually. Anthony Prince, the attorney who's been advising the Ross Camp folks on how to file their own lawsuits, wasn't able to make it to the community meeting last night. However, he did send this audio speech, which I'm going to play. I wasn't able to play it last night because I didn't get it in time, but here it is.
Well, first of all, I just want everybody gathered tonight, I think it's a very important step, one in many steps that the concerned community has taken over the years on behalf of those who can't afford housing and are otherwise compelled to live in the streets, in the tents, in the freeway overpasses, by the railroad tracks, in the cars and RVs, doubling, tripling up in apartments. The fact of the matter is that homelessness is a national phenomenon. And here in Santa Cruz, the fight that we're now engaged in at Ross Camp is just a part of a much broader statewide and nationwide struggle of the most disenfranchised, most dispossessed segments of the population. So we in the California Homeless Union, as most of you know, have been providing assistance to those in the Ross Camp, where we have recruited members into our union, and we've worked closely with the Ross Camp Council to prepare a motion for a preliminary injunction to stop the city of Santa Cruz from dismantling the camp. We're encouraged by Martin versus Boise, the Ninth Circuit decision, which essentially holds that until such time as the city or county or whatever governmental entity is involved has made available safe, habitable shelter, they cannot criminalize those who are in the streets or otherwise unable to afford housing on their own. The decision is one that has already been acknowledged as controlling in the city of Santa Cruz by the city manager. And on that basis, the city apparently is trying to construct or at least make representations that they're trying to create additional campsites so that they can dismantle the Ross Camp. Is that the Martin versus Boise clearly calls for a level of shelter. If you read the decision, it's quite clear on its face, and we're prepared to argue that. I think the city of Santa Cruz is well aware that they don't have adequate shelter space, which is why they are floating these various proposals to create additional outdoor camps. The position of those in the Ross Camp and our position and the reason we're providing assistance to the homeless in that camp is that they are a community. There are people there who have come together for mutual aid, for mutual protection. If the camp is broken up without the shelter being in place, and when I say in place, I mean demonstrably in place, functioning indoors, and without the kind of restrictions which we feel are unconstitutional restrictions, until such time as that happens, the city of Santa Cruz should not breaking up that that camp. So with that, again, our union is, the slogan of our union is homeless, not helpless, and we're hoping that we can get some assistance from the traditional legal community, but whether or not we receive that assistance, we're determined, and those in the camp are determined, to file a the appropriate legal action to stay the hand of the city of Santa Cruz. So with that, I again want to express my, unfortunately I can't be with you tonight. I'm in Chico, in here in the aftermath of the campfire last November, which, as most of you know, created a crisis situation where 50,000 people became homeless overnight. That crisis is still with us here in Chico, still with us here in Paradise, California. And in fact, those who got burned out of Paradise on November 8th have been, there's been information that Paradise survivors have been located in 29 states across the United States. And that's emblematic of the complete failure of the state of California to take care of those who were impacted by that crisis. And before that crisis and every single day, the crisis which is being replicated is a crisis of unemployment, inability to afford housing, family medical situations, which lead to the bankruptcy and complete economic ruin of families, and all that leads to homelessness. So we are going to fight, and we're going to make a serious effort here to convince the court that the city of Santa Cruz should not proceed with its plan. So I would advise everybody to continue to pay attention I know many of you. I can't believe each night I know many of you. The health organization, Food Not Bombs, the Ross Camp Council, Communities of Conscience. I think that it's absolutely critical that the community continue to support the fight. And in our mind, supporting the fight, most importantly at this point, the critical element is to support the Organization of Homeless People. We have formed locals of our California Homeless Union now in six different cities, and we're part of the national network determined to reestablish the National Union of the Homeless, which some of you may recall in the 80s and 90s was a very significant force in creating a presence for homeless people and compelling the Secretary of House of the HUD Secretary at that time, Jack Kemp, to set aside 10% of all HUD homes for homeless people. He reneged on his promise, and we're here to see that that the justice is done this time around. So I apologize if I'm rambling, but again, I salute all of you, and I will be in Santa Cruz tomorrow, and we will continue to render assistance. And good luck with your proceedings tonight.
Anthony kind of also made a second shorter speech, which I'm also going to play, because it kind of gives credit to a few of the folks involved. And he's easy to listen to.
Ready to go. So this is Anthony Prince from the California Homeless Union. I'm their general counsel. And I just wanted to say hello to everybody gathered tonight. It's very encouraging to see support in the community continuing, as has been the case for many, many years. There's a very important progressive element in Santa Cruz that has always been there advocating on behalf of poor and homeless people. And it's good to see you out tonight. Unfortunately, I can't be with you. I'm in Chico Paradise area, where we have a homeless union function here tonight. However, as you may or may not know, we have been giving direct assistance to those over there at the Ross Camp in their struggle to stop the city from dismantling what is essentially a community. It's clear to us, and the city has already admitted, that they are bound by the recent Ninth Circuit Court decision, Martin versus Boise, and have obligations to provide actual habitable shelter before they can continue to criminalize those who can't afford housing and are therefore compelled to be on the streets of Santa Cruz. So I know we have other members of our union there. Alicia Kuhl is there. I believe Wes White from the Salinas Homeless Union may be in attendance. We are going to continue this fight as long as it takes. We feel that the homeless union movement is part of a new birth of freedom and a declaration of independence. The union formed because we're tired of people dictating policy to homeless people without homeless people having a say in those policies. We're tired of waiting for someone to come in and rescue homeless people. We're tired of people presuming to speak on behalf of homeless people when we know that the homeless communities are perfectly capable and have produced outstanding leaders. And that is precisely what is underway in Santa Cruz right now, as we're working on a pro se lawsuit, a lawsuit filed to stop the city. And if we can get some legal support, that would be great. But whether or not we do, we're determined to do everything we can to defend the interests of the homeless there in Santa Cruz. So good luck tonight. I'll see you all hopefully very soon. And all I can say is solidarity forever. Homeless, not helpless. Take care.
And that was, both those speeches were a combination of the two. Would have been given had Anthony been able to make it down, but he was up and guy runs all over the place. One minute he's in New York, the next minute he's down here. But he always seems to be doing organizing, which means I can't really call him a guy on a junket. I don't think he is. We'll see where this all goes. You're going to be able to hear shortly from what happened last night. But first, let's do a little of Randy Rainbow's latest song parody called The Mueller Blues. I'm no fan of Randy's packing with the Democrats and this big ruckety puckety phony baloney Russiagate stuff, which you got plenty to attack Trump on without claiming he's a Russian spy in order to justify the machinations and distract attention from the Democratic Party's corruption in its 2016 convention manipulations. And I've talked about this a bit before, but if you, you know, there's been a lot of, if you're against Trump, you got to be in favor of this ridiculous Russiagate narrative. Nor should you be particularly sympathetic to Mueller, who's got a bad history. He's a former FBI boss. I mean, he's the kind of person who you would be looking upon with suspicion if you've been, quote, progressive at all in the last two or three decades. But, you know, anybody against Trump, oh, they're suddenly a hero and they're sanctified and so forth. It's ridiculous. Anyway, but the songs that Rainbow does are often very enjoyable. I don't recognize this particular parody. I think it comes from a more recent musical. So a special set of five street shit sheets, that's the original publication I put out some 30 years ago about homeless civil rights and what was going on then, to the first person who contacts me at 423-4833 and tells me what this actual musical parody is a parody of. So get to your phones and do it.
Thanks, Wolf. Always great to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. And I want to start by playing a little of what you've told me on the question of President Trump and collusion. Listen to this.
Is there any doubt in my mind that he colluded with Russia? I don't know. Do George and Kellyanne sleep in the same bed? No. Wolf, the answer is no. There's no doubt. It's Mueller time, mother. Lock him up. Lock him up.
Impeach!
So as you know, the according to the special counsel, Robert Mueller, the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government. Are you ready to accept that conclusion from Robert Mueller?
100%, Wolf. This is only good news for the country, and I am here today to say that I am ready to leave this behind us and move on without some big song and dance. Excuse me.
OMG, he's reached a conclusion. Holy shit. I'm sorry to curse, bitch. Thankfully, there's been no collusion. So why don't I feel better yet? In fact, I feel worse.
The Mueller report now turned in. Robert Mueller's work is over.
It lasted 22 months. It's no wonder we're stressed. I wish we could just let it go. The things that we learned are not what we guessed. And as for the rest, we may never know.
How much, if anything, will America get to see?
I've got those. Yay, it's finally over. Wait, it's only just beginning. Blues. Those damn you, Robert Mueller. I mean, thank you for your service. Feelings. Those, give me that report. Now throw this trash in the bin. Congratulations, Hannity. But wait, what'd you win? Those, what about obstruction? Here comes Rudy Giuliani. Feelings. Those, is it really over? Can we still indict Ivanka? Blues.
Robert Mueller has delivered his report, but the political fight over it is just beginning.
Repeatedly, he stated...
No collusion.
He said, I guess that he was right.
Are there any Russians here tonight?
Is he exonerated?
Total exoneration.
Technically, not quite.
Mueller's stopping short of exonerating the president.
His comments were off color.
And we kicked their ass.
He'd constantly deny...
No collusion.
No collusion.
No collusion. No collusion.
And slander Mr. Mueller.
But the entire thing has been a witch hunt.
Now look who's his favorite guy. He's got those. Maybe if I hadn't been so shady in the first place. Blues.
Russia, if you're listening.
Those LOL, I told you so. Oh God, that was a close one. Feeling. Those, I'm so smart, I knew it was a hoax and a hunt. Now I'll play the victim till I get what I want. That I should be more honest, but it's not what Daddy taught me. Reddit. Time for celebration. How is it your business what I do with foreign nations? Hope they just forget those other 12 investigations. Blues.
Well, 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 look at you with no convictions. I tell you, it's a great day to be an American. I mean, Donald Trump, Jesse Smollett, You in that pink blouse? People are getting away with murder around here. Sarah, will we ever see the full report?
I think that the president is doing exactly what he should, and that's leaving that decision into the hands of the attorney general.
Well, is it wrong for the president to claim this is a total exoneration when the attorney general's letter clearly says it's not?
It is. It is a complete and total exoneration, and here's why.
You are really feeling yourself today.
Because the special counsel, they said they couldn't make a decision one way or the other. The way the process works is that they need that opportunity.
Doing standing in a forest, feeling. Toad bartender, we're gonna need to refill my cup. And since there's no collusion, could you make something up? And why does Devin's cow have way more followers than I do? Feeling. So is it over? What just happened? Can't we just arrest Ivanka? Where's the rest? I gotta see it. Give it to me. I don't want it yet. No, black, white, red, blue, left, right. Thank you. Go away now. Please don't leave me, Robert Mueller.
No collusion.
Impeach!
So now we're going to roll into the community meeting from last night, the There Is No Place for Hate in Santa Cruz rally. And again, reminding you that if you want to check out the other side on this issue or hear their dialogue with activist and city council member Drew Glover, you can get out to the Depot Park. I think it's 119 Center Street or thereabouts, the Depot Park station, where that is going on, even as this is being sent out on the Internet. But this audio is a little bit rough at points because my equipment is still screwed up. So I can't really give you direct, clearer, the kind of stuff I'm used to putting out. But I can, you know, put out some fairly intelligible stuff, but it is rough. So I'm going to begin with, you'll hear Steve Plaich introducing this event, and then you're going to hear people going around talking. The Ross Camp Council will be talking. Master of Ceremonies or coordinator Phil Posner will be speaking, and there'll be a variety of other people. I will probably leave it pretty much for you to hear and decipher, but I may interrupt at different points. I found it educational. Well, actually, I knew most of what was being said, but you may find it educational if you haven't been following this stuff. And it also was public. And there were no real critics. But let's let the folks speak for themselves. We'll see if the real issues here were to organize people for Ross Camp resistance. And I don't know how much of that actually happened. It more became a sort of a exposition of the Ross Camp, a sort of an exposure of the Ross Camp Council, the people who are volunteering to be the face of Ross Camp or some of Ross Camp for the community, and who are also the plaintiffs in the lawsuit to stop the closing of Ross Camp, as well as to express feelings about what's going on. And I'm not too excited about the feeling stuff, because I think there's been more than enough of that over the last two decades. Feelings endlessly, but no plans for real action that actually go anywhere. Now we actually have a community of people at Ross Camp. They need to be supported, and there needs to be a lot of specific organizing activity done. And I don't know if that happened, but yeah, you can hear what we talked about, and you can be the judge. You can also get in touch with Ross Camp liaison Alicia Cool at 431-7766. That's 431-7766 if you'd like to help. All right, let's get into it.
It's a starting point for us as individuals. It's a starting point for us as a group, and it's a starting point for us this evening. So we all accept that as a principle, you know, on which we're going to be making our decisions and our discussions and the things we're going to be talking about. We were going to have some unhoused musicians here to sing John Lennon's Imagine. Unfortunately, they have not arrived yet, but we're going to be doing much more than imagining a community without hate. We're going to be actively working for a community without hate. And that's one of the things we want to foremost and work on tonight. Some of the areas of discussion tonight will be the current conditions at the Ross Camp. glad that we're having many more people come because this is an important, very important union discussion for all of us to have. So let's take a moment, actually, and make some room for our
guest.
Not to be
The circle is expanding. We have now 40 people, maybe.
Good. Well, thanks for
the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Steve Blake speaking.
Maybe one of the most important facts that we face in our community today, and that is. Our emergency shelter capacity. Is it adequate? I think everybody in this room would agree that it's not. Do we need to do more? I'm sure that everybody in this room would agree that we need to do more. What is it that we need to do? How are we going to credit that debt? How are we going to make this a community that accepts the fact that we need to find a place for people to sleep? That is the challenge that we all face individually, every day, and as a strategy to move forward. That's why it was so important, and I really am thankful to my colleagues and friends in Conscious Action and Food Out Bond, the Poor People's Campaign, and HUF for calling us all here together. That's why I call it the call to action, gathering, because we are gathering as a community to think and discuss and to strategize and perhaps come up with some actions that we can take carry forward from today to address some of the needs in our community. One of the things we'll be discussing, as I said, is the existence of the Ross Camp. Its current condition today, what it's going to look like tomorrow, what it's going to look like in the future, will it remain a viable encampment for people that are unsheltered in Santa Cruz? Will it move? Well, we all have ideas about that, I'm sure we will. We're looking forward to hearing everyone's ideas about that. That's why we're all here. Because this is the richness of Santa Cruz, the diversity. This is why we're able to address these challenges and really come up with solutions that really meet the value of this country. We're going to be talking, we're going to be hearing from some of the folks from Ross Camp. At some point, we're hoping that you'll be able to dialogue with them, because I think that's very important. We'll be talking about some strategies that we might bring to City Council in terms of the continued existence or the movement of the Ross Camp as it exists. There'll be certainly some direct action considerations. We'll be talking about some legal strategies that we've been developing. There is no reason, there was some suggestion earlier that there may be people who are opposed to people sleeping outside in Santa Cruz, who are opposed to generating more an adequate emergency shelter system. And that may be some kind of an opportunity, you know, not to listen to them, but to guard ourselves against disclosing strategies. That's not what we're going to do. That's not who we are. Who we are people who are open and willing to discuss what we believe are strategies that serve our community best and serve our underserved community of unsheltered residents best. That's who we are, what we are. So this is going to be a frank and open discussion. No matter what side you fall on in terms of your appreciation of the people who need shelter the most who don't have. That's pretty much all that I have in terms of introduction. Again, really thank you all for being here and sharing us to be here. And I hope we hear from all of you and hear from all sides and all strategies and ideas about what we can do in concrete terms. In terms of direct action, in terms of things that call us to action from today and get things done today and move us forward into tomorrow. That's very important. Truly important. That's why we're all here. So I will introduce the next section of this. This is going to be, let's hear from those who live outside. We'll introduce council representatives and the report on the camp and the potential eviction, which is scheduled to begin April 17th, although the council has established a deadline for dispersal of that camp by the 17th. They are going to begin to move people out and around on the camp. So you should note that this is an urgent situation. situation is in what they call in law an emergent, and you know, an exigent situation. So let's all keep that in mind. Alicia, do you have some folks to introduce us to?
I do. My name's Alicia Cool. To anybody that doesn't know, I've been acting kind of as the Rob Camp liaison to sort of be an advocate to you know, want to be part of their voice, you know? They're my family, so.
Ms. Ray, do you want to explain what the camp council is?
It's like a group of people that act in place of everybody else. And we talk for the rest of the group, the whole camp, and we discuss matters. We try to help out our neighbors and get them what they need, and we listen to people. Not everybody wants to talk.
So the camp council is the organizing body that has come together to try to bring about communication, dialogue, etc.
Yeah, I think it's like the way that you ask somebody to do something, you know, and we are, you know, we hear what you guys request and go, you know, and make sure that, you know, everything has
Like, they're the ones that have told me, like, in response to, like, the fires that happen. They're the first responders that let me know if there's something that's needed. And I've partnered with other people in the community that have helped provide resources, like the DSA, some organizations that have helped provide things like fire extinguishers. So we've helped address needs that have come about on our own in the camp. So that's another reason for the camp council. It's really beneficial that we've been able to have that. Santos, do you want to
as well. What we're trying to do is just help one another have some type of peace there, you know, so that way nobody's policing anybody, nobody's looking right over their shoulders. If they have some problems, then they can just talk to us and we can, you know, address those issues.
My name is Sunny. I've been out with Ross Encampment since probably 5 months before the River Street 120 had closed up last year, and going in and out between from Starbucks, but now I'm back there again in the same tent where it never moved from the beginning of it, which would be like the beginning of this year. What I do, I just clean up, pick up those needles at least, whatever I can do.
Yeah.
Right now, my mind's not there to where I can function well as the importance with others, my family. So I can't even think about my kids right now, so they are my family. I'm sensitive to sacrificing even myself.
Yeah, and it's been a safe place, I do have to admit, for me to come home to and know that, you know, so somebody can always hear, you know, if there's ever a problem. You know, there hasn't really been too many problems where, you know, it's, you know, been too serious, you know. But if there is a problem, there everybody is there to, you know, protect you, so, you know.
And I want to mention, too, that this is a representation of the council, but it actually is larger. We have about 8 to 12 people. They just couldn't all make it, you know, for various reasons. There are barriers to having meetings outside of the camp environment. They can't leave their things. Not everybody has somebody to watch their things. So there are some barriers to everybody meeting outside of the Roth camp. So we're lucky to have actually as many as we do have. And I also wanted to take a moment, since this is an open discussion, to invite you to ask questions. If anybody has a question, maybe if you can raise your hand and we can go around the room and you can, you know, ask them a question. Desiree, Crystal, Santos, or Sunny, or you can ask all of them, however you want to do that. I saw a hand over here first, and I'll try to, you know, go around the room. Tyler?
Just a quick one. I've heard a couple of people who are from the camp mention that they
they appreciate one thing at the camp more than that they've seen in other different spaces, and that's what they said was community. But I've not spent any time there, so I'm not really sure what that entailed or looked like. So I wondered if you could maybe describe something like that. So
describe the sense of community?
Yeah.
Who would you like to answer that? Anybody? Or
I don't know. Whoever feels they have like the most to say about it.
What was your question? Describe the sense of community there. What gives it a sense of community? Is that the right question?
Yeah, I've heard other people say that that's what they felt there, so I wanted to know what it looked like and how it...
I think it's like any other neighborhood or whatever. You get to know your neighbors, you know, and, you know... You get to know your neighbors, and it gets to be real close, you know, or just a neighborhood, and, you know, where they're in a tent.
Let me add a little to that. Like if one of the ladies needs something, you know, something, all you gotta do is just yell, you know, hey, does anybody have to make some toilet paper? And somebody's gonna bring the toilet paper. Yeah. Hey, I need some batteries. Somebody will come out with some batteries. It's like, does anybody have any water? And your neighbor's gonna give it. Somebody, when I'm gonna start saying, I got some. That's a sense of community. That if whenever you need something, all you got to do is say something, and somebody's going to come out. Somebody's going to have it. I had a tick on my back, and I had it like a whole night, and I didn't know it was a tick, and then it started bothering me, so I'm like, I didn't have no tweezers. I can't reach my back. But as soon as I came out and said, hey, I got a tick on my back, I need somebody to get it out, they were there. And you got it out.
I think we'll just go around this way, too. I saw a hand over here, you.
Yeah, I'm just curious how the journey process to... how people that are on the camp council, how they are chosen. I'm just curious, do you have elections this summer, or is it volunteer?
No.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, I mean, we haven't had a kind of an election process. It's been open to everybody. What we do, we get flyers for the meetings. We said whoever expresses a desire can join us and join our meetings. So it's open invitation. We haven't, like, elected anyone.
And we had more people. But as we processed, I mean, we kept going, and it started getting more like us having to come here, be accountable. A few people didn't. They dropped out. So now we're just left with the ones that are real serious.
Yeah, I think I joined, and I'm still with the council because those are my family, you know, that, you know, there's a lot of good people out there that just need, you know, a place, you know, that don't have rent money. Not everybody out there doesn't have a job. There's people out there that have jobs, and believe it or not, you know, like me, I paid at one point $1,100 rent. It was water, cable, trash, diapers, food, gas, phone, insurance, and the list went on. And I was a single mom working two jobs with a 2-year-old baby. And, you know, if I can live in a tent, like somewhere, and be able to still work my job, which I worked, you know, and have, you know, able space, you know, to save up some money so that I can afford, you know, or maybe until I find somebody that could help me because I couldn't do it by myself.
I think I saw going around another question.
Yeah, excuse me. I'm losing my voice. When the fire marshal was coming to speak before the city council a few weeks back, I was worried. There was a special session on the Ross camp, and I was afraid that he was summoned to give evidence for a reason for closing the camp. But instead, he got up there and said it was just some amazing things about working with you all and about how responsive you were and how you very quickly, you know, remediated all the things that he... And there were just a few things. And I was just blown away by how complimentary he was to... And I was wondering, does the city generally recognize that you all are the point of contact for the community? And are there other representatives of the city who are working with you on similar things?
Well, we have standing meetings. We've had a standing meeting with the city council member, Drew Glover, and he comes out, meets with the people on the Ross Camp Council, and then he gives the updates back to, you know, other people. And we've also met with Megan Bunch, who's the, I guess, the homeless assistant to the city. We've had Susie O'Hara out there. So, yes, they recognize the Ross Camp Council. They actually said thank you to me a couple of times, you know, for our work. So I do think that it's recognized in some respects.
That's good to know.
In some ways, the terms with the fire chief,
I am an individual who is start a fire out there. And just to get someone's attention and see and notify that in person and in public like that, it caused a lot of attention to where who would do something, who's going to grab something. Like, I need another friend out here who's either in that camp and couldn't use it. That support, you know, means because we're all together in this area, coming from either west, north, south, east, you know, from another town, and sent there, you know, and individuals like that don't need to disrespect our community of what we're trying to do, but trying to take advantage and force is no way of handling it. So if there's an attention that needs to be drawn, or if a friend or a brother is laying down and you need to AMR or an ambulance, I'm going to run to HSC and get that kit. But dealing with anything else, we do need those fire extinguishers in case. Mm-hmm. It would be a good support.
Yeah, we used them already.
Oh, you need more?
I need
to get a recent list. That's another thing that they helped me do, is provide a recent list and things like of what they currently need. The city isn't providing everything, so we've had to work as a community of volunteers to get the things that they need. Cynthia, you had a question, and okay. Cynthia, and I guess Ursula. We'll try. You guys know better than me.
Well, I thought we were just going to go around in a circle.
Sure.
I thought it was next in that respect. I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Sunny.
And next to Sunny.
Santo.
So I just want to ask one person, so I have two Santo. So do you have running water there?
No,
we
don't.
All the water that's there has to be brought in?
Yeah, we bring all our water there.
That's rough.
And with the trip, there's a lot of people, they take all the recycling and stuff like that, so they'll ask us, hey, you know, can you put the recyclables aside? You know, that's what we do. So it's a lot easier too. We don't have to do that like what we do out here.
It would be nice to have water
at a camp.
There's a river, right?
Do you have a question?
Yeah, several years back during the Occupy, there was a person leading a workshop, and I really liked how it went. And she's pretty well known, but I don't want to say her name right now. But I was talking to her about the situation of just ever increasing numbers of people becoming homeless, and how much dissent there was in all the communities. And I said, do you have any suggestions on what we might do? And at the time, she suggested this, like, fishbowl approach where she said, usually what you do is you have the two opposing groups, one's on the outside circle and one's on the inside circle, and it's a nonviolent conversation. So it's meant to be really cool vibe, and people ask questions of each other. So house people might ask questions of homeless people, and then they switch. And then they switch it up. And sometimes I'm like, maybe. But after seeing the Depot Park people come out to the last city council meeting, and just when we're facing the council, it just feels like we don't have any real opportunity right now to really talk like human beings. We're both on opposing sides, and everybody's fiercely competing, at least I am, to make my point. So what I wonder is, I hope I explained it well, this fishbowl idea where the would you guys be willing to do something like that?
I think you're saying, so you guys have an opportunity here to also ask questions of others. So if you guys have a question that you want to ask anybody here, feel free to do so. And that's the perfect opportunity to do that. I think we're going, or did anybody else go? Are we coming
after
around to virtual?
A show of hands of people who want to ask questions. So 1, 2, 3, 4.
I think you're next. You're next, because we're going in a circle like this.
Yes. What I saw and what I felt was that people were so well taken care of, the elderly, the children, the people who may have mental challenges. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you didn't you go on runs a lot of times to get food and things that people
yes.
needed
yes.
so that everybody had something?
Yes, we all do that. Yes.
You all do that.
We do that. Yes, we do
yes.
that.
That is so wonderful. I have to applaud you.
Thanks.
We had two dear friends that just died recently, and it wasn't due to overdose of drugs. These two people had heart conditions, and one of them died of exposure, and it had nothing to do with drugs, and they were real dear friends of ours.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't know your name. She's next.
One person is coming
to
that. Go ahead.
Kind of along the same lines, one of the most like polarizing articles I've read about the Ross camp has been the articles about the deaths that occurred there. About the deaths that occurred there. And y'all have been talking about like the sense of community that you have at the camp. I'm just wondering, like, if any of you had like personal relationships with these people,
yes,
and
we
felt like
we
you don't feel like talking about
we
it.
Did.
Everybody hear the question?
No.
The question was, have they had any relationship with some of the people who have died?
All the sponsors.
She died in my bed. She just went to sleep, and she was smoking a cigarette, and I go, you don't cigarette? She goes, no, I'm not done. She put it out. 15 minutes later, she took a breath, she's gone. And I'm sitting there, we listen to music all the time, and she's listening to music, and I'm like, okay. There was something outside, and I went outside. She goes, okay, and then went back in, and my friend came in with us, and she goes, you need to check her. She looks like she might pass away. I checked her, and the ambulance guys, they took an hour and 15 minutes to try to revive her. Hour and 15 minutes.
But it had nothing to do with drugs.
Not at all.
Nothing to do with drugs. It would have happened no matter where she would have been.
Gentlemen, it's
with her time.
My name is Ray, I'd like to say, here at EY. I see a lot of prejudices and ignorance in this county, even with groups, even with the city council, by thinking everybody's on drugs, which there are a lot more people on drugs and not good people that do have a home. But my question is, since I have to get going, is how do we get a hold of you?
I got a phone. Yeah, I got an email and a phone.
Yeah, we got a phone.
I don't have a phone. You can catch me either telling her. Music a lot.
You can reach all of them through me.
I have a question for the community as well. Is there any individual who would happen to have a backyard space available for safety being or as well as even staying back there? I was a little kid, and my parents raised me as well as jumping from hotel to motel, apartment, backyard, but still going to school and holding it together at a young age like I see as the individuals in front of me. And my parents held it. And while we were in the backyard, it was with our parents or our family members, an uncle, an aunt, another relative close to us. But we actually did work on something like labor work and landscaping with the maintenance facilities in the backyard as well. And neighborhood watch, too, included.
So
I'm not all around.
Start thinking about renting spaces maybe in their backyards or something. I mean, I don't know how well code enforcement and things like that, but I mean, you know, these are solutions. We're also here to talk about solutions. So if anybody, you know, has an area that they can suggest for an encampment, something that you think would, you know, go over well, you know, we're here for solutions.
We have women warriors who are already helping Crystal out.
I mean, we have several men out there too as well.
You know, I do got to say that, like, I'm more scared of the community than I am of the homeless people because of the situation that I was in. It was the first rain, and I don't really know how to tarp very good, and so everything got wet. And I don't have a car, so of course I had to get a shopping cart to push my stuff to the laundromat. And as I'm pushing my overloaded shopping cart on the levee, really embarrassing, you know, already, you know, and some guy, real clean cut, like, was on his bike and
Bandits.
Yeah, he was a true biker. and jumped off his bike and proceeded to cuss while he's staring at me in my eyes with this evil look of, like, hate. You know, that he, profanities of how much he hates us. And I've never seen this fight in my life. And I don't, I'm not, I mean, I wasn't trying to bother anybody, you know. I'm always trying to clean up. I clean up from the Ross parking lot to the tannery. But, yeah, he pushed my shopping cart over and threw all my stuff everywhere and got back on his bike and rode down and trusted another guy and spit on him and rode by, you know. And, like, the evil look that was in his eyes is more scary than ever, ever even running into any of these people, you know.
So I'm not going to lie. I am hoping that if there's anybody who has a negative heart in the room, that you hear things like this and would have, you know, some change of heart. I am hoping to change a few hearts. I feel like Santa Cruz does need a moral revival around these types of issues. We need to handle these things with compassion. There are a lot of different levels of homelessness. We have disabled people, people who can't afford rent. So to categorize everybody and say, you know, that you're just a terrible person or you must be mentally ill or on drugs because you can't afford the rent around here, I feel is very unfair. So, and with that being said, the lady over here had a question. You.
What are your top, like, three threats? I mean, you just started talking about, like, harassment, but I, yeah, like,
They threw three bottles of water and throw it at us and hit our legs and stuff like that. They yell profanity on the freeway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
That is even the case.
So we thought of getting a sign and said, if you're going to support our community, go ahead and honk.
Yeah, I've been out there and I've witnessed people honking really loudly by when they drive by, saying really horrible things out the window as they drive past the camp. I've been speaking, obviously, with a bunch of different people, hearing a lot of different stories. I've heard stories of people walking down Highway 9 being shot with paintballs, hit with frozen water bottles. I've heard of people going and getting out of their car on Highway 9 and looking for camps, tearing up people's tents, yelling and screaming at them, threatening them. I've heard stories of, now I've heard of the story, a guy was sleeping and he was hit with a chunk of cement in his head and was actually ended up in the ICU. So I've heard everything from mild harassment to, like, people could die. And I've actually heard of people dying out on their own and it taking several days for people to find them. So that's another reason and another concern that people have had in the Ross camp is if they're sick or if something were to happen to them, it's better to be in a community than out on your own. What if you died and somebody didn't find you for a while?
That happened to a couple of our friends. Mm-hmm.
I've heard that a fear from people.
That's already happened.
When we planned this, we did have an agenda. So I'm going to have to move it along, but I'll take the people have their hands up now, and then we're going to move to the next subject. You, and then Kevin. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's anyone that has thought of this idea or made an attempt to, like, to have, like, a website that could match, you know, homeless people. Because there's, you asked about backyards, right, in town. But we live in a big county, and most of the lower rent stuff is, like, out in the mountains. There's lots of space, you know, once you get out of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of, you know, I'm just wondering if there was some way to connect people who have space with people who need somewhere to, you know, temporarily, you know, like, kind of a
That's something I will look into because that's a great idea. I'm not sure how, unless, like, somebody was willing to maybe offer additional services, if we're talking about, like, in the mountains, because people need to come into town a lot for, you know, life things.
Yeah.
So I don't, if we can somehow manage that, I think that would work, but,
And then there was a van, I remember that, when there was that last camp, they had a van service.
You want to go
down? So why don't we do Kevin, and then we'll move to
can
the next.
Can I have a response to him real quick?
No, because we're going to talk to the team. I mean,
can I just make a a lot of people who are living outside very much need to be near services, number one. Number two, the buses have been cut to most of the poor people who live out in the mountains and so forth. So just wanting to add super quick, staying in touch with what happens to homeless people has a lot to do with staying in touch with services to poor people, and in Santa Cruz there is a very deliberate attempt to cut bus services to poor people.
Responding to the concern about city code enforcement and stuff about people living a year or two or maybe 3 years ago, the city very specifically relaxed the code enforcement groups in the face of the officially proclaimed housing crisis. So it's a much lower priority than so many other things right now.
That's good to know. So if anybody does want to offer something like that, if you want my card, I can help set you up with a person you might be comfortable with.
I have a question. Why do they have to move the camps from Ross?
Well, we're going to be coming up to this.
Yeah. Bill has an agenda.
As far as code enforcement, they're lax towards landlords, not the tenants, not the people in the yards. They're lax. They're relaxing the building code. They're not relaxing the laws that say you can't camp on your own property or in your own driveways. I just want to be clear with what is being, you know, what is lax.
There's people living in spaces that were not up to code for habitation spaces.
Phil, what's next?
That was the first half hour of the 2 hour long discussion. We're not going to hear all of it tonight, obviously. I may be playing more of it on Sunday. I'll probably be playing another half hour after this brief musical break.
Cause you dressed up, cause you dressed down, cause you said no, cause you slept around, cause you played games, cause you lost your head, cause you went slow, cause you jumped ahead, cause your hair's long, cause you shaved it off, cause you did wrong, can't erase it, tough. Cause beauty is pretty, all an opinion, cause you felt pretty when you attracted your minion, cause people see what they wanna see, reveal our reflections, to see who's to be.
Bitch Slut from 2016. There'd be more to it than what there was, but there was a little something. You're tuned to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. Name of the show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse. It's all about homeless civil rights or lack thereof and current events around those issues. Even as you're listening to this, if you're listening to it on April 4th, in the evening, between 6 and 8, there is an open forum where apparently Friends of the Depot Park are giving a grilling to Councilmember Glover out at the Depot Park station. I think it's 119 Center Street is what I read online. Go out there if you want to check it out. And who knows, you might even find me out there with my recorder wandering around. I've given a report from Brent Adams, who you'll actually probably hear later in this audio of last night's community meeting, There Is No Place for Hate in Santa Cruz. But Brent has not been answering the phone. He is upset with me for having on the air Alicia Kuhl, who is an activist you've heard, who's the liaison with the Ross Camp Council, which we've been hearing for the last half hour answering questions. You'll hear more responses from members on the council, as well as other people in this large circle of people who were at last night's gathering. And you'll also hear Brent talking about his upsetness with the idea of a protest encampment, which he has been a militant opponent of for the last, 10 years now almost? Less than that. Let's say eight years maybe since the Occupy. And I've said to him, and you've probably heard me if you've heard our dialogues, we've had some interesting discussions online, that people can pursue the same objective through parallel paths. He's been attempting to get city council unsuccessfully to support encampments, to support services. He has gotten, I guess, some grant from the city and or county around the issue of his storage, which he had to set up himself independently. There's some who claim that he's just out to give himself a job and to make money and to profiteer off this. I don't think that's true. I think he has a genuine interest in these issues, but I also think his unwillingness to deviate in any way to allow other people to have different opinions without denouncing them, which is what he frequently gets into, is a real difficulty he has. And it acts against his credibility, which he should be afforded on other issues, and that's just too bad. Anyway, what's next? There's a story from Seattle, which apparently has its share of NIMBYs, as all cities do. The story is headlined, "Poses Safe Parking Lots for Homeless People, Some Community Members Push Back." Kick back, if you're going to be more accurate, since it's a matter of kicking people while they're down, really. Privileged people excluding the less privileged from the public spaces nearby. Ending worse, that government do the same.
Genesee Park in Columbia City, and some people say it will be the home to a new safe parking lot for people who live in their cars. But the city of Seattle says not so fast. Nothing has been decided yet.
Lined along the streets in Soto, you can see vehicles stuffed to the roof. People living in their bus or van or car.
Yeah, it's been home sweet home. This thing saved my life.
Like William Pritchard.
Sometimes I think about just going into the hospital for a couple weeks. Sounds nice. Just somewhere to be taken care of. I'm getting old. And I'm tired of living like this.
Tired of living in his van as he continues a methadone program. 10 years sober from heroin.
The back part turns into a bed, or you can turn it into a table and chairs.
He makes it work, but would rather live in a house.
Because I'm stressed out every day. I have anxiety problems with just having to move. I just want a place to be at so I can, I'm trying to get into a place. So I'm just waiting.
In the meantime, the city set aside $250,000 to open safe parking lots for people who live in their vehicles, possibly one at Genesee Park. But Pat Murakami with the South Seattle Crime Prevention Council wants the city to reconsider.
We've had the parking of RVs along Genesee already that's been a problem for the community. We feel that they'll follow where the lot is, and the people in RVs are more inclined to be drug users.
Even worse, she thinks it's a done deal.
Boom, They've asked for a permit, they've done improvements to a park, and they made up their mind without actually asking the community for their input.
But Will Limke with the navigation team says that's not true.
So the city is considering all options right now. We were looking at a location down in Genesee, but we really haven't made a final decision.
While Murakami remains skeptical, William Pritchard is hopeful and wants people to know if he gets a spot at one of those proposed safe lots, he won't waste the opportunity.
I keep it clean wherever I park, and I don't want needles. I don't do any of that. I'm stuck to my program, and that's all I do.
Coming up tonight at 5, we'll hear how other cities are handling the growing number of people living in their cars and the one exception Pat says she would support. The South Seattle Crime Prevention Council meeting is tonight at 7 o'clock, and they'll be discussing safe parking lots again. Reporting from Seattle, Nadia Romero, Q13 News.
Story from April 3rd, Seattle proposes safe parking lots for homeless people. Some community members growl back, or push back, as it says. I'm looking over the story to see if there's anything additionally new here. Oh, it's mostly, I think, just a repetition of what we've heard. Yeah, it's just pretty much you've heard what has been said. Kind of evidence-free fear and, you have to say, bigotry that we've heard from here in Santa Cruz around Depot Park. Now, I'm no fan particularly of the Depot Park program as some sort of cure-all and be-all and end-all. But the arguments mustered against it, oh, it's near a school, oh, there's dog walkers nearby, oh, the soccer team plays there during the day, as though it's somehow a large menace because people go and sleep there at night, a small number of them, is simply unsubstantiated. And this notion that, you know, you have drug users who are actually not going to be allowed into a high barrier sleeping area, probably, although, you know, they should be. Everybody needs to sleep. And the issue is whether you are improperly disposing of your needles or acting with bad behavior, not whether you are using drugs, because that's, if that were the case, they would be running around and going from home to home demanding that you not use drugs to be able to be in the neighborhood. And it's just not true. So the real question is the visibility of the issue and the behavior that results. And to simply tar homeless people generally with bad behavior, or even drug users generally with bad behavior, is contrary to the evidence, I would suspect. I don't have the evidence the other way either. So it's not really fair for me to say contrary to the evidence, but the evidence has not been presented. Just, it's like a fait accompli. Everyone knows, you know, that the earth is flat. Everyone knows that those blacks are inferior. You know, everyone knows that those Jews are like rats and they prey on people. All these toxic mythologies or false statements of the past, well, I think they're cousins to what we're hearing at the present around homeless folks. Get back to the community meeting, the No Hate in Santa Cruz, Por Favor meeting, and let's hear more of it.
Well, that's what I wanted to know. Are these people living in you know, spaces that were not up to code for habitation spaces?
Phil, what's next?
Well, that's a story.
We're
going to
find the fine spaces. We're not doing that. Let's move to the next.
So, I want to again thank Alicia. It's like she came out of nowhere. She's done an incredible job with helping to organize. And you're going to hear from Alicia in a second when we talk about the lawsuit that we're involved in.
So, Alicia.
Oh, thank you, guys.
And you guys for coming. We're really grateful.
That's the idea.
You know, some of you have been there, so you know that just for people to get out and to find someone who's going to wax their tent or whatever, it's a hassle. So we really are grateful for your coming. Okay, so Keith is now going to address an issue that is part of our action agenda. Keith?
Okay, so I'm Keith, and I'm one of the original people that started the first agenda. And this agenda item is what to do about the potential eviction of Ross's camp. So as it currently stands, there is a proposal to start moving people out on the 10th of April.
and to clear out the camp by the 17th of April. And the part of the issue is that they don't really have any particular location suggested as to where people will go. And there's also a conflict about whether moving everyone to what was called the Boneyard, or maybe like what they proposed with Depot Park, would therefore justify the closing of Ross Camp because they are no longer in violation of a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals case called Martin v. Boise. So the issue is that it does not look like, from what we're watching at City Council, that they're actually going to have a alternative for all the people living at Ross Camp, nor even beyond that, an alternative for the people that can't fit in Ross Camp that are living throughout our community. So there's been a number of proposals as to what to do. And one of the most common is to organize a march from Ross Camp of the people that are willing to go to leave there, to take another physical space and set up at least one or maybe two satellite transition camps that we would just do on our own. So one of the things that we're handing out is we're raising money for people who, so if you have money, not that, to donate to this GoFundMe so we can pay for fines and bail and things if people are arrested or ticketed at either Ross Camp when they come to evict people, or arrested at the transition camps that are set up as a result. So what we really need is a lot of support from people to join in this activity. The initial proposal, there's also been a proposal, and it's not clear how effective that would be, to actually all of us link arms when they come to try to get rid of people. But the problem that obviously that's happened in the past is everybody shows up to protest and they wait for everybody to burn out and leave, and then they come in the middle of the night while nobody's around. So that's one of the suggestions. So we've been scoping out areas for potential locations for alternative camps. And
for example, we recently...
Yeah, and so Paul Lee has a suggestion that he's been encouraging, and this agenda item came about in part because of his proposing it at one of our last meetings. So, so would you, Paul, like to mention your possible proposal of where we would march to?
Well, the logical sequence for me is for the rule of Clovenet. Clovenet is a 620-acre park I helped save it with the Greenbelt Initiative 40 years ago. And they have a sanctioned homeless program there that's going in June, the Homeless Garden Project. They will break soil in June and establish their project there. You have a large area around the club, and I thought, well, why can't we restore the club and make that our center? It's just sitting there waiting to collapse, but it could be done. I've tried to get a hold of David Foster at Habitat for Humanity to get them to take on the project, and we would invite Jimmy Carter to come and drive the first nail. And then I get in touch with the Sackler family and try to get $10 million for drug rehabilitation because they're responsible for the opioid crisis. And they're doing such efforts now to try to make up for what they've done. So, I'm a little hesitant about it all because I also have a Circle Trail project that goes through Progenit. And I don't want to jeopardize that project or the homeless garden, but what the hell.
something's got to be done, and the Ross camp has demonstrated that the city has it set up its ass. I mean, to have spent $90,000 a month at the Boneyard, and without taking any regard for the self-administration that you guys can do, and that's my experience from having opened the first public shelter here in 1985, and then organizing 35 churches in the county to take in homeless one night a week. We never had any money. We never paid anybody anything. And it was all volunteer.
Yes.
And we did it for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. So I couldn't have been more dismayed at the way money is dumped on...
So we went to look at the Poconos, and one of the issues was we were hoping we would be able to bring in equipment, but they have like six locks on the gate.
Yeah,
and so you would have, and you would see an effort to get through the gate. So you could walk, and we could walk everything through, and maybe that's what could happen. That is one proposal. There's actually a huge area along 9 that they've cleared so people can't sleep there, but that could potentially be taken over.
You mean Sycamore Grove?
On the riverside? The opposite side of the river.
Yeah. And then so there's that possibility. Then there was also potentially, over by the courthouse, maybe not on the bench land exactly, but someplace over there. So there's like, the idea is to figure out a place where we can march and go set up an alternative camp. And this, but also, not with the idea that everybody at Ross leaves, but just that we have show that there's all other alternatives that can happen in the community if we ourselves organize, because I think the city council will never really ultimately come up with a plan.
No. And Paul, one other thing was when we went out there, we all felt it was it's quite a distance. So ultimately, I think it's going to have to be people from the Ross camp who decide, is Poconet realistic for them in terms of them getting there and getting their stuff there. It is an interesting site, and we're glad that we saw it, but at this point, we're going to have to leave it open to see what people think.
Some of them are left there.
You want me to call on these people?
Rich, would you like me to take staff?
Yeah.
If you were when I saw Sunny, I saw Elise, and then I saw Crystal, and then I saw you, and you. Hi.
All right, so at the last two city council meetings, one of the council members had said by law, Section 8, there shouldn't be a homeless person being arrested or cited at 2 o'clock in the morning sleeping on an overhanger. And we both got arrested. I got arrested with a female. A month later, she was not pregnant. But now I went to court, just recently got out of court, and I have to stay off the premises from where I got arrested for a whole year. And they try to give me community service with the fines and fees as well, too, to still stay in the community. Being under it and giving us tickets, we got arrested, and now we still have a whole year of probation. I'm not off probation until 2022. For all the minor things that I've been given or arrested or cited for. And with the council's law and justice right there, I'm going to show you right now, I'm supposed to clean up the community still. Just a little bit. And trying to kill or find out another place to go. While everything is going on around, including the race as well. I mean, I thought this was a community that we could all get along in. It's strong. I know it is. I know that it's in my heart. But we need to help each other as well. And criticizing is hurting. It's very hurting.
It's one bad cop. We're all bad cops here. It's one bad one in prison. We're all bad. We're not.
Okay, so Alicia's next, and then Crystal. Yeah, actually,
I'm sorry, I'm going
and then Brent.
I'm writing it down.
You don't have to see
that. Yeah, in response, I kind of want to say something to what you're approaching, Keith, which is, you know, when the camp is dissolved, what are we going to do? I really feel like one of the lead-up actions that we all need to take is to start to voice the fact that the dignity of homeless people at the camp is being completely trashed. And we need to do this in places that are visible, not just city council. So we need letters to the editor, to the Big Times. We also need to talk about the hate and the harassment. We also need to talk of
the racism.
The racism. So all these things, the fact that so many of the people who are homeless are so vulnerable. I've met mothers whose husbands went to jail. This is one mother whose son was schizophrenic. At the shelter, they had a really hard time housing the son with the mother. Eventually, he was hit in the Regan intersection by Route 1. I could just go on and on about the people I've met. I could talk about the staff who would bring their own pit bull, very threatening in the morning while people were trying to get breakfast. I could talk about the lack of staff to be able sometimes to just follow rules so that we could have some consistency. So personally, I totally understand why people want to stay outside and have community. I also want to just say there's a long history here that's so accessible. It's in the library basement. You can talk to James Beard, the library director. How about Mike Rothman saying when we had the peace camp at the county building in 2010 that homeless people should all go hide. That's what homeless people should do. You should go hide. Meanwhile, we are losing housing and this is the last thing I'll say. Sorry to be long-winded. Over 70% of homeless people in 2014, according to Smart Solutions, Don Lane's thing, were born or grew up here in Santa Cruz. These are displaced people. To a large extent, not all, but many of the people grew up here or were born here and have been priced out. They can't live here, and we don't even have discussions of low-income housing at the city council meeting ever. So I just think that we need to represent ourselves outside in the venues that matter, and I would really appreciate it if everybody here would take it upon themselves to just write a few sentences to the Good Times or to the Sentinel and so that we could get published.
Crystal?
Wow. Okay. Sorry, I totally lost track of what I was going to say.
We can come back,
but I think that right now we are, we as homeless people.
Gotcha.
Cynthia, she's waiting for you.
Cynthia,
Crystal
passed. Oh, so the next is Kevin.
Oh, we got, excuse me.
We can come back to you if you remember.
Oh, yeah, right. So I don't understand why a handful of lots on the gate are taking the bogey myth off the table.
We haven't taken it off the table. We're only saying that logistically it's going to be a hard thing for us to occupy.
Well, what I'm saying is, what if the locks go away the night before?
Yeah.
If the locks go away, it's a big change. But again, it's not going to be up to the community to decide that place is close enough that people can get to it easily.
Well, then I'm saying that a lot of the people that are at the Ross camp came from the Poganets.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we came from because got kicked out of the Poganets. We went to the Ross camp.
Actually, I got burned out of big time fires. That's where I was at.
I think that should be a
problem.
You know, so we are already familiar with
that
area.
Well, it's possible we went to the wrong site.
Let me finish, please. That's like over. Please let me finish. Yeah. Don't interrupt. Thank you. Crystal. Yeah, I think all of us or the, as a community, could probably, pretty sure we could build our own shed if we needed, you know what I mean?
That's what we do.
Pretty creative, you know,
we're not trying to build a house out there, we're just trying to survive and be comfortable, you know? We're not trying to go build a home and
be outside,
But you know, outside, out of mind, but still, you know, we want to be safe.
Okay, Brent is next. Are you sure?
Yeah, oh, yes.
I wish we had the community that could really anchor a move protest occupation camp. That would require really strong affinity groups and really strong activists. And I've been over the last 20 years watching protest camp after protest camp, who's mostly silent is Robert Norris, who's been to nearly all of them. I was at Peace Camp 2010, did battle with police there. I did battle at Occupy Santa Cruz at the door. Four years of fighting felony charges for that. I watched Peace Camp 2010. Freedom Fighter, Freedom Sleepers. What I said then, I'll say now. What is the efficacy? We're not talking about this as a strategy or as a tactic. How many arrests, how many citations were written at Freedom Sleepers? I assert over 100, over several hundreds over the couple of years, and there was no court support. What we have often is activists leading the homeless population into a police line, and then they go home and go to sleep. Mm-hmm. They said they would stay up, and they said they would get the citations. I watched Steve Plage himself run to the sidewalk 10 weeks in a row before we challenged him to get his citation at first. So what I want, I'm not trying to be an acerbic or a protest voice here. I finally had to move out of the protest community and build some programs. But I really do want to see, with this population that I love and I'm from it, a group of people who really could, like what you need to do, we have to get something on the board first before we talk about this. Porta potties. What are we going to do with our poop? Mm-hmm. What are we going to do with our garbage? How are we? What rules? What agreements? Of course, it would come out of the community, but also we need a strong. The community also actually doesn't have that sense of savvy for them to really face the no disrespect to really face the police. So let me finish my thought. I'll wind it up here. So I advocate for transitional encampments. Finally, I've seen dozens of them over many years. I'm not talking about that. But if we are really going to do a protest camp and put our most vulnerable population on the march and then facing cops, let's really talk about what that is and looks like. And the people who did the last one, let's talk about what actually happened. I'm not hearing that. So this is happening in a vacuum.
We've worked on part of that.
I was here.
You're in the room. We're getting a report of money.
No, but I'm talking about efficacy. Let's have a success report about Freedom Sleepers from the people who are here. They're the people in this room. They're all around. Let's hear about that before we talk about doing another one. Because I say you're leading sheep to the slaughter yet again, and it shows really you care more about this as a political football than actually the people you say you care about. The end.
Okay. All right. So that was now we're going to stay on stats. Right. So we had Ernestina and then Ursula, and then I see some more hands. I'll give you two. We've got Ernestina, Ursula. We've got Desiree after that. We've got Sunny, Lisa. We've got Alicia, and then we've got James.
I'm going to pass around a list, and you can put your name, phone number, and email of people that are interested in participating in a direct action.
I have been in this community for about 25 years now, and in that period of time, I have seen camps going, coming and going. But this is the first time I have seen so many people in one single place. And I think that's the big difference, and that's the power that you have right now. The fact that you are visible, because I was homeless two times in my life, that we try to be invisible when we are in the streets, just to avoid harassment, just to avoid being targeted and all that kind of thing. But this time, it's different because you are together, and that's what is the strength. Sending you guys to the Polonaise, it's up to you, but I would say no. I would prefer to go to the county building because then it's more visible. or if you want to stay there, let's stay there. I think that we can organize the community to surround you and protect you.
That's fine, but there's no right for it.
I know.
I mean, you know, people go, and there was a big truck that stopped in the middle of the highway, a big semi in the middle of the highway, okay, and honked his horn forever, and did not pull away until, yeah, the whole, you know, we have to sleep too.
I know.
You know?
I know. So
that is so rude.
They're big kind of building because it's surrounded by all the grass area and the buildings, so they cannot get that close to you. But that the only thing I want to say is, so once again, I will respect whatever your decision is. Mm-hmm. The only thing I want to say is that your strength is in the numbers.
Okay. When we do move to the next spot, we are going to move. And we do have people ready to do
it. And it's not, I just want everybody to know, it's not for political show, it's for necessity. Where are the people, if they close the camp, where are the people they're going to go? It's not a political
show. It's not safe
show.
Out there for all
And when it comes
know.
Time, I do have an RV, but when it comes time, I'll be right next to my sister Desiree. And if they arrest me, they arrest me. But, you know, it's not a political show. This is a necessity. We have people that need a shelter. We can't just ignore them and expect that they're just going to separate and go back into areas where they're going to be in danger, put in danger.
And furthermore, you know, I challenge anyone in here who is not 3 months away from being in the sticks. Yeah. What happened if you get sick? What happened if you stop your work? You are going to be there too. So we are all in the same boat. Yeah. Okay.
Ursula's next.
I want to talk about Dusk to Dawn and how I think that it's a horrible thing to do to people is to have them have to leave at dawn, take all of their stuff with them. To go where?
Yes, right. Where?
And you'd have to take everything with you. And then you put it back at nighttime. Try putting up a tent at night. I mean, that's no easy task. My goodness sakes, how in the world can anybody think that that's decent human?
It's terrible.
It's terrible. Okay, I'm done.
Some of the community members and some people who are actually over there at that encampment who actually do take the time to either going through the garbage and getting the meals out, hazmats out, the complaints that many folks were getting of what was being seen just in that area, though, family members, and the danger and the outcome. Well, as a same person that these guys were doing on their own time, I do it on my time too as well. Mm-hmm. And it's not just at that encampment.
It's everywhere.
Beach, mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And no matter what, either city, state, or place, it's everywhere. And keeping it as our community, and this is our backyard, our pool, the beach, we have to put all our effort into it. We have to have those safety hazards trainings for employees here as well. Metro station, security services, security first alarm, rangers, parks and recreation places, either a box or those little containers that could actually carry one of a hazmat. Point coming from the beach, the boardwalk, and we have it where tourists come here, family members, and it's so close that a child could just walk down the stairs and step. That's all it takes for either one of us.
I have the same with Sunny. You know, we need to have more. So there's containers so that we can pick them up, because of carrying those things all the way across, all the way back to Ross, you know, it's just a long way to, and I don't even use needles, I don't even touch them, but I pick them up, because I'm a mother too. So
I think so more resources, but I'll take care of that problem as well, a little bit more, maybe harm reduction.
I'll
make a note.
Yeah.
of boxes.
Okay. Lisa Sachs.
My name is Lisa. I'm a community member and kind of new to social action for this cause. I was homeless and gender. I am a social worker. I trained with the Health Project. I really like their support of the community. And I would imagine they're still out, kind of hopefully. Have they been supportive at all? People doing outreach?
Yeah.
Offering services.
No.
What I would, just as a new person, I was really hopeful when I saw the camp start up because it was visible, and I thought, you know, wow, there's a legal place for people to be. And I think also I really feel it's important for mental health stability and people's families to just be able to stay somewhere permanent, to not have to leave every morning. And I want to get more involved socially and politically, and I started volunteering with Food Not Bombs just a couple weeks ago because a friend of mine is doing it. And I was trying to do some research online about what's going on and why is the encampment being threatened and was it legal to begin with. And it was really hard for me to find any facts online. Like everything through the Sentinel, I had to sign up and pay to see the articles, and I didn't want to do that. And so I don't understand really, and I'm here to learn more and to see how I can support. But one, like the idea of going to people's backyards, there's a ton of rich people around. There's people with backyards, like, and not all of them are negative, you know. And so I would like to see more outreach, and, you know, I could be an advocate for, like, hooking up with my friends and their friends of friends and spreading the word and more articles in the papers. And also, like, I'm down. I think people would be down to go on this march and go wherever, and I think that's temporary. It's a temporary thing, but ultimately, I think there needs to be political action to make it legal to freaking be able to sleep on our streets, right? So, so whatever I can do, I don't have a great, you know, I will be arrested. I'll go on the march. I'll help you spread tarps.
Thank you.
I'm
not making those decisions.
Can I do a quick response?
No, I'm just doing that. I'm not making decisions.
You're the facilitator.
There's still a lot of, I'd like to respond too, but, and there's other people who haven't had a chance, so I think we should continue going.
So we got Alicia, and then I have James and Taylor.
And
Tyler, sorry.
And Cynthia, I do.
Okay, and then Taylor.
Can I respond to what she was saying?
In respect to keep it going, I'll pass my turn so that everybody gets a chance. I'll give my turn.
Oh, I didn't really want that, but I was just kind of questioning, you know, like all of a sudden, you know, we've been there since before Christmas, and all of a sudden we're getting services, and then we're getting shut down. You know, we finally got to talk to the fire chief, and he made a design of what he needed, you know, for the coast. And we, you know, Desiree and everybody had went around and made sure that, you know, it was maybe not exactly to the exact, but things were taken care of. And requests were made, you know, and requests were, we got them done. And wondering why would you even come in and have us do the fire road and clear all this stuff out if you're just going to kick us out? Why would you be planning on putting a water tank, you know, or saying that you're going to put, you know, you need that space cleared because you're going to do this? And then be kicked out. When you see it clearly, try to make an effort to prove everybody wrong, because everybody knows or expects us to fail. So we want, you know, and we're working on a community that wants to prove everybody.